Continuing in Matthew 10, please turn there with me. Matthew chapter 10, just to refresh everyone. What we're seeing here is Jesus, having selected 12 special disciples, he has now called them to himself and commissioned them as apostles. They've gone from learners, that's what a disciple is, to ones who are now sent out on a special mission. And so he is telling them about the mission in the very short term and in the much longer term through this chapter. So let's begin reading at verse 1 of chapter 10 in Matthew's Gospel. And when Jesus had called his 12 disciples to him, he gave them power over unclean spirits to cast them out and to heal all kinds of sickness and all kinds of disease. Now the names of the 12 apostles are these. First Simon, who is called Peter, and Andrew his brother, James the son of Zebedee, and John his brother, Philip and Bartholomew, Thomas and Matthew the tax collector, James the son of Alphaeus and Lebbaeus, whose surname was Thaddeus, Simon the Canaanite, and Judas Iscariot, who betrayed him. These 12 Jesus sent out and commanded them, saying, "Do not go into the way of the Gentiles, and do not enter a city of the Samaritans, but go rather to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. And as you go, preach, saying, 'The kingdom of heaven is at hand.' Heal the sick, cleanse the lepers, raise the dead, cast out demons. Freely you have received, freely give. Provide neither gold nor silver nor copper in your money belts, nor bag for your journey, nor two tunics, nor sandals, nor staffs, for a worker is worthy of his food. Now, whatever city or town you enter, inquire who in it is worthy, and stay there till you go out. And when you go into a household, greet it. If the household is worthy, let your peace come upon it. But if it is not worthy, let your peace return to you. And whoever will not receive you, nor hear your words, when you depart from that house or city, shake off the dust from your feet. Assuredly, I say to you, it will be more tolerable for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah in the day of judgment than for that city. Behold, I send you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Therefore, be wise as serpents and harmless as doves. But beware of men, for they will deliver you up to councils and scourge you in their synagogues. You will be brought before governors and kings for my sake, as a testimony to them and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up, do not worry about how or what you should speak. It will be given to you in that hour what you should speak. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father who speaks in you. Now, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for a disciple that he be like his teacher, and a servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebub, how much more will they call those of his household? Therefore, do not fear them. For there is nothing covered that will not be revealed, and hidden that will not be known. Whatever I tell you in the dark, speak in the light. And what you hear in the ear, preach on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body but cannot kill the soul. Rather, fear him who is able to destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a copper coin? And not one of them falls to the ground apart from your Father's will. But the very hairs of your head are all numbered. Do not fear, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. Therefore, whoever confesses me before men, him I will also confess before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, him I will also deny before my Father who is in heaven. Do not think that I came to bring peace on earth. I did not come to bring peace, but a sword. For I have come to set a man against his father, a daughter against her mother, and a daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law. And a man's enemies will be those of his own household. He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. May God bless to us the reading, hearing, and preaching of his word today. We're looking at verses 21 through 23. Now, brother will deliver up brother to death and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. Boy, this is a grim message, isn't it? Come to Jesus Christ and be hated. Well, it's not quite like that. But certainly, we do not hear this coming from, say, the lips of Kenneth Copeland or of Joel Osteen or anything of the sort. We don't hear that. But we do hear it from the lips of Jesus Christ. He is warning these apostles, but also promising them. With the warning comes an assurance. With the warning comes an encouragement. And so we're going to be looking at this. In verse 21 then, he gives a really discouraging picture here. Now, brother will deliver up brother to death, and a father his child, and children will rise up against parents and cause them to be put to death. I remember as a kid, one of the horrors of communism that we heard about, and among the horrors that we had heard about from Hitler's day, which wasn't all that far away when I was a little kid. I was born less than a decade after the end of World War II. Few of you are a little closer than that. Maybe you were born during World War II. But in any case, of children being informants against their parents or against their brothers and sisters or even parents denouncing their children. This was a horror of these societies, a horror under totalitarian regimes. Well, you see, this comes along with somewhat what we looked at already before. We were seeing about the apostles being told that after Pentecost, because this is looking now in the longer term, this isn't in their immediate training trip. In the longer term, afterward, they would be hauled before what we would call church councils in the synagogues and maybe up the Sanhedrin. And they would be hauled before the Roman governors and the Roman emperor himself in the case of Paul, and kings in the case of Paul. They would be hauled before these and words would be given them. They would have danger from what claimed to be God's people, what claimed to be his church, and they would have trouble from the civil government, corrupt ones all. But surely they would find safety in the family, in the third institution. There will be safety there, because we always have this tie of kinship, this tie of blood, which binds us together. We can always depend upon family, right? No. No. Jesus says no, right here in this verse and in other verses that we read. We see this again in verses 35 and 36 that we'll be looking at in some weeks, although we'll not touch upon it tremendously much, because Jesus is talking about this opposition and this persecution from family, not directly as he is here in verse 21, but as illustrating a point for something else, that we must have our ultimate allegiance to him. So, for the apostles, it would not be so. And for early believers, following after the teaching of the apostles, following the Jesus whom they preached, it would not be so. And in many places in this world, even now, it is not so. The family has been a potential source of deadly persecution from way back. The first murder for the sake of godliness, the first murder, period, happened within the family. As Cain struck down Abel. Basically, because Abel was godly and Cain was not. We see back in the Old Testament, in Micah chapter 7, verses 5 and 6, words that we looked at a long time ago. Do not trust in a friend. Do not put your confidence in a companion. Guard the doors of your mouth from her who lies in your bosom, from your very wife. For son dishonors father, daughter rises against her mother, daughter-in-law against her mother-in-law, a man's enemies are the men of his own household. That's what Jesus is quoting in verses 35 and 36 here in chapter 10. And all that Jesus spoke here came to pass in time for believers after Pentecost. You can read, for example, in Eusebius' church history about people being denounced to the Roman government, people being denounced to the Jewish synagogue very early on because of their faith in Jesus Christ. And it led to deadly persecution. We have seen this in the past with Romanism attacking the true church after it had become greatly corrupted and then it left. The real Catholic faith, which by God's grace and by His grace alone, we still hold to. We have seen how even today, in wicked cultures all over the globe, through the 20th century through to current times, where there has been and is tremendous persecution. Maybe some of you have seen the headline about how now is the worst time ever for Christians throughout the world. Now is when people are facing persecution, not from just one source, a Roman government, not just two sources, from an apostate religion in Judaism. They're facing it from a number of different totalitarian and atheistic governments, from Buddhist world view systems, from Hindu ones, from Mohammedan ones, and not to blood, but to a large degree from a corrupt, though professing to be Christian, church. Even today, because of fear or seeking favor of the rulers, or because of wanting to salvage the honor of the family, or with little provocation at all, there can be sudden death and betrayal from those we thought loved us most. So, is there any hope? The people who love us most, the people whom we can trust. I remember being at a wedding where it was remarked that his family who will always stand by you. Not the case. That's not the case. When we see all this, we would say, why in the world would this be happening? Well, we see this in verse 22, and you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. Why in the world would this happen? Why would leaders of those who claim to be the people of God, why would those who are supposed to be the servants of God for good, as Paul teaches in Romans 13, and one's own household all turn treacherously against those professing faith in Jesus Christ, seeking to be holy, seeking to be godly, seeking to be lights in the world. Well, we've kind of answered the question by the question. Why in the world would this happen? It is because these are of the world. They love their own. They hate, reject, and try to destroy those who expose them for their darkness. Inwardly, they worship self. Inwardly, they are ruled by self. Inwardly, they are one family in Adam. You see, it is not blood. It is not kin that determines things. It is covenant. Are you under Adam or are you under Christ? That's the big determiner. It's not skin color. It's not language. It is not all kinds of other things. Are you in Adam? Are you in death? Are you under destruction? Or are you in Jesus Christ and in the light and in life? That is the question. That is the determiner, and that is what makes for hatred of believers. Those who are still in Adam do not want any part of the second Adam, and they cannot change. Only God can change them. And in His mercy, He does that. Are you in Jesus Christ? He has done that for you. But these people want no part of Jesus Christ, nor do they want any part of His people. So let's be clear. We are, or would be, if God did not restrain them, we are hated, slandered, libeled, injured, pillaged, raped, killed, because they want to do this to God. They want to do this to His Christ. They can't get a hold of them, but they can get a hold of us. So what hope is there? Where is there safety, help, and hope? Jesus tells us this right here at the end of verse 22. He who endures to the end will be saved. Now, I want you to notice what Jesus is not saying here. He does not say he who holds on to himself will be saved. He says he who endures to the end will be saved. He's talking about the end, not how anyone got there. So don't go thinking this means I have to work at it and it all depends upon me. Jesus is not saying that. Rather, what guarantee is there for our enduring? I would have us look at John chapter 6. Maybe there are three books. John chapter 6. And I would like to read to you from verse 39 through verse 44. Jesus is talking to the crowd after He has fed the 5,000. Let me back up to verse 37. Jesus says, "All that the Father gives me will come to me, and the one who comes to me, I will by no means cast out." For I've come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. And this is the will of him who sent me, that everyone who sees the Son and believes in him may have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. The Jews then complained about him because he said, I am the bread which came down from heaven. And they said, is not this Jesus, the son of Joseph, whose father and mother we know? How is it then that he says, I've come down from heaven? Jesus therefore answered and said to them, do not murmur amongst yourselves. No one can come to me unless the Father who sent me draws him, and I will raise him up at the last day. There is the endurance. There is how we get there. Jesus is determined. Jesus is able. Jesus is willing. And Jesus has done what he was commissioned to do. To do the perfect will of his Father. He obeyed his Father entirely. And in this particular, it is this thing that he would have us endure to the end. His Father said, don't you lose even one. And as we read of him in Psalm 40, quoted again in Hebrews chapter 10, to do thy will I take delight. Jesus saves and makes us endure to the end. It is through the power, through the determination, through the covenant of grace secured by the person and work of Jesus Christ, that there is an absolute guarantee. You in him, you will endure to the end. He will raise us up at the last day in obedience to his Father. Not might, not could, will. We can also think of some other promises. How many times, I wonder, if I quote it in front of you, you've got it memorized by now. Psalm 34, verse 19. Many are the afflictions of the righteous, but the Lord delivereth him out of them all. Or how many times from Jesus speaking to his disciples on the night of his betrayal, before he starts, just before he starts into his high priestly prayer in John 17. In John 16, 33. In the world you shall have much tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. You see, what Jesus has done as our second Adam is that he's put us in a new family. One that is in covenant. One that is his body and his bride. This covenant is secured by his blood, not the corrupt blood of Adam, not the mere earthly ties we share with our blood relations. We have a new relation that goes on forever and ever. We must then love one another, as John speaks of so much in his written works, particularly in his first letter, 1 John. There's one other thing I'd have us look at, that Jesus would have us look at, more to the point, in verse 23. When, not if, when they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. I talked earlier about on the training trip that it might come to pass that they thought they had a good family to stay with, and they stayed there, and after a little bit it became evident that they'd made a misjudgment. And this was an ungodly family, an antagonistic to the gospel family. And so they were to leave and shake off the dust from them in that house. Or maybe they would go to some town and the whole town rejected it. All right, they were to go to the city gate and wipe off any remaining dust from the town against them. And judgment would be severe. Well, here he is saying, when the persecution comes later on, get out. Get out. He was not commanding them to stand and die. Sometimes in the military there are commands to do just that. There is military necessity, a stern military necessity, to stand and die. And it's gone back a long time. Many of you know of the stand of the 300 Spartans under King Leonidas at
Thermopylae.
Thank you. It suddenly blanked out of my head. You know of that. They stood and died, and they protected the rest of Greece. They stopped the Persian onslaught until a sufficient conglomerate Greek army could be put together. There have been others like this, that men were sacrificed. They sacrificed their own lives in order to protect those behind them. But Jesus is not saying that to us. The apostles and those who followed after them had perfect freedom to avoid persecution, to run from it. This was not cowardice. And it is ungodly to call this cowardice. It was obedience. We can go back a few chapters to the Sermon on the Mount in chapter 7, verse 6. Do not give what is holy to the dogs, nor cast your pearls before swine, lest they trample them under their feet and turn and tear you in pieces. Okay, leave them alone. If they don't want the gospel, go on. Go to some place where they do. This was an opportunity for more evangelism. Jesus is saying here, if there's persecution, go on to someplace else. Because there are lots of opportunities. So many, in fact, you're not going to get things done until a certain thing happens. In fact, it won't be done even when that certain thing happens. Much of Israel must be covered. Jesus himself so sent them in Acts chapter 1 verse 8. They were to go to Jerusalem and all Judea, Samaria, and by implication up in Galilee as well. And then, of course, to the nations. But this task is so huge that in over a generation of time, in more than 40 years, it won't be done. Now, what's Jesus talking about here? He says here, I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel. That is, you won't be done doing this before the Son of Man comes. It will not be completed. Now, what's this mean before the Son of Man comes? Well, there are some commentators who have said, well, this means Jesus was sending them out right now. They're going to go out right now, and he'd catch up to them later. Well, that just doesn't work here at all, because Jesus is talking about a long-term thing. There are others who say, this is when Jesus comes back again to end all things. That is, to bring about the resurrection, to bring about the end of this world. When he comes back after his ascension, visibly, physically, literally, in glory. But that would mean that evangelism there in physical Israel would be continuing on to that time, and that hasn't happened. Now, what Jesus is looking at is what we see later on in chapter 24 of Matthew's Gospel, the destruction of the temple, the destruction of the functional priesthood, the end of the sacrifices, the end of all the typical and ceremonial stuff. As the scaffolding is dropped off the people of God, and the true, beautiful temple made of you, its living stones, built upon the foundation of the prophets and apostles with Christ Jesus as the chief cornerstone, that shines forth, stands highly and beautifully to the glory of God. This is talking about AD 70 and the destruction of all things there. So, his coming was to destroy all that, all the ceremonial trappings, to make it impossible to return to the Old Testament type, shadows, and forms, and put the church in its final form. But the evangelizing of the Jews won't even be done then. It must continue. Because they will come back as a whole, they will be grafted back into the olive tree of Romans chapter 11. You see, what Jesus is mentioning here as an encouragement to us is that the gospel shall succeed. And we already kind of saw that, didn't we, in John chapter 6, verses 39 through 44. So we can go with the gospel to the Jews. And we can go with the gospel to the nations, knowing that the world will hate us, but also knowing Christ's promise to save us, deliver us, make us endure to the end, and save others through us. That's what we know about the gospel. All the power and glory, all the heaped up hatred of the wicked will be blown away like chaff, as we saw in Psalm 1. This is why we must keep preaching and witnessing for the gospel. Despite hatred, despite persecution, because we have the absolute guarantee, Jesus shall reign. Jesus is reigning. Jesus is bringing about his holy purposes, and he will destroy everything in his way. Amen.